Hello, everybody.
Hello, here we are, back again.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good.
I'm full of baked potato, and I'm quite happy about it.
It's your optimum state.
Yeah, peak potato. I mean, peak physical performance.
No, I like peak potato.
I think I'm peak potato.
Peak potato.
I'm feeling peak potato today, and I'm ready to record some fresh...
Oh, no.
No phones during the presentation, please. Oh, no. God, trying to get my wife off her phone.
I'm sorry, it's my mom.
She doesn't like to be kept waiting.
It's my mom. Sorry, I apologize. It's on silent now.
Better be. I'm face down.
Why face down?
So you're not looking at it.
No, you're not the boss of me. You're not the boss of me.
How are you?
I have COVID.
Yay.
And it seems like Kieran doesn't.
Whoop, whoop.
That makes it even worse.
Over there feeling all sorry for yourself. And I'm like, oh, as I back out the room.
I know. We got over all the sick bugs earlier this season.
I know.
And now this.
Yep.
But we're here.
We're here.
I'm here. I'm getting it done.
We're doing it. We're bringing you a fresh round of spooking.
Mm-hmm. Episode 8, baby.
Yeah. Speaking of which.
Speaking of which. You look so happy.
Thank you. Thank
How
you.
Long have you been sitting on that one?
Quite a while. Quite a while. I think I might have tried to throw it in ages ago and it got cut out.
And you're the editor. That's not even me.
Yeah, I think I said it like as you sneezed or something. Or maybe it did get in.
I don't have that kind of power.
I am the editing king.
You decide the final edit, not me.
I do. I have the power. I can make you sound however I want you to. Just editing out every like fifth word you say. You're like, man, Amy sounds really thick. She can't get any of her words out.
Or just editing out like all the facts and dates and names. Like a redacted document.
Putting like bleeps in all the wrong places. Well, shall we roll some music and get into it?
Yes, we better. We have a lot to get into.
Yeah. So what a spooky tale do you have for us today?
Well, we're into the scary and the creepy, and I thought we would talk about something a bit more serious this week.
Sounds good to me.
Sweet. This week, and I know that you're not going to be thrilled by this, this week we are talking about the haggis.
Oh no.
Yeah. We had to do it eventually.
I suppose we did, didn't we?
Yeah.
It's kind of core to Scottish life.
Yeah, I know you don't like these stories.
No.
Or they scare you a bit, but...
Yeah, they're too spooky. They're too real, man.
Yeah, so if you need a break, you can tell me. And you have the editing power, so...
I appreciate that. It's probably good to do a good PSA about them, though.
A PSA?
Public service announcement.
I mean, yeah, do you mean as the episode or, like, as a warning at the start of the episode?
The episode is the PSA.
Okay, I'm with you. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think it needs to be done. I've put it off for 3 seasons.
Yeah.
Because it's just creepy.
It is indeed.
Personally, thank God, I've never personally had an encounter with a haggis. Touch wood.
Touch wood. Neither have I. I've been very fortunate in that respect. I've just heard other people's horror stories who have met them while they're camping and things, but it kind of puts me off camping.
Well, the worst of it is hearing stories of, like, older generations in the family. So like, my grannies were... had lots of siblings, so you hear about extended family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite close enough, and I don't want to hear anymore.
Yep, I think that's more than direct enough contact with a haggis.
Yeah, I would not want to be any closer.
No,
but unfortunately lots of people across Scotland have gotten a lot closer, and there's lots of scary stories from all over the place, but we're gonna get into it. This week we are talking about the legend of the haggis.
Mm.
Legends of haggis have circulated for hundreds of years, at least. And you have to remember that Gaelic stories traditionally weren't ever written down, so they may have existed for longer than that. It's impossible to tell, because these written records could be recording something that was said hundreds of years before. Mm-hmm. Most of the legends of the haggis come from parts of Scotland where there's lots of mountains, So the Cairngorms, a lot from the Cairngorms, and a lot from the West Coast.
Yep.
Because there's a lot of, it's very beautiful, very dramatic scenery in the West Coast. Lots of mountains in the West Coast.
Stackpole is the main hub I've heard of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, you spent more of your childhood in Ullapool than I did.
Yep.
I grew up in the East Coast. We had a sandy beach on our doorstep.
I know, that sounds pretty sweet. And we now live in the East Coast.
Exactly. So I win.
Is two haggis, haggai. Is it like sheep's? This is.
You know. I mean, I don't really appreciate you telling jokes because this is already difficult to get through.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But I also appreciate that you tell jokes when you're uncomfortable, so.
It's my thing.
This was going to happen. Now, it's interesting that a lot of the legends come from mountainous parts of Scotland. It seems to have a lot to do with the biology of the haggis.
Is that so?
Yeah, so it makes sense that these stories would come from these places, but we'll get into that in a little bit. The earliest record I could find for a haggis attack was back in the 1100s.
Around when written records began, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. King Alexander III, who we've talked about before, he hadn't died suddenly yet, and the Vikings from Scandinavia were carrying out attacks and raids across the country.
They were doing their thing.
Yeah, that's the period we're in. There were some conspiracy theories going around that the Vikings brought the haggis with them, but I don't know.
How would you contain one, though?
Like, I mean, we'll get into it, but it's very, very difficult.
Yeah, like, how would you manage to get one into some sort of trap?
That's why I don't believe that theory even a little.
Yeah.
The tale from the 1100s centres on a man called Fiala, who was a shepherd in what was then the land of the Gaels, so the northwest. We've talked about it briefly in a couple of episodes, but way, way back in Scottish history, the land was divided differently to how it is now. So there was a part of the northwest that belonged to the Gaels, and there was the Picts, and then I forget who's further south. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was divided into territories like this. It was different. So a lot of the legends come from the land of the Gaels, so northwest. And Fiala was tending to his flock. He was moving his sheep higher into the mountains where the grazing was better, which is common. But before he could get them to the usual place he took his sheep, the flock scattered in all different directions. He couldn't keep track of them all, and he couldn't follow them all, which was bad news because this was his livelihood. And what made it worse was he couldn't actually see what had spooked them.
Always creepy.
Yeah, they just ran, which is way worse than actually knowing what caused it.
Yeah.
Until he saw a very quick, sharp movement in the gorse bushes ahead of him. And gorse bushes are sharp, thorny. They have yellow flowers. You don't want to fall into a gorse bush. It's very painful.
Yep.
You've been there. But before Fiala could investigate for himself, a brown blur shot out of the ground and leapt straight at him. Now, Fiala was immediately overcome with pain, but he still couldn't see what it was that was attacking him. And he thrashed around, trying to get this pain off his body, trying to stop whatever it was, but he couldn't catch this thing. And eventually the pain just became too much, and he lost consciousness on the hill. Luckily, Fiala was found and taken home by another shepherd, who had been sent into the hills by Fiala's wife.
That is lucky.
The other shepherd had come back. He had not. Now, Fiala's injuries were terrible. He had lots of cuts and bruises, and they seemed to be focused a lot on his legs. The descriptions in the tale focus a lot on the injuries to his legs that meant that he couldn't really do his job again.
Yeah, absolutely. One attack like that is no joke.
I'm just going to check the pronunciation of Tagish. No, I don't want to know how to pronounce Gaelic. I think I'm just going to say Tagish.
Do it. Babe, just taking the piss with how long this is taking.
I know. This is a very serious subject. We need to move on. The thing that had attacked Fiala was the haggis, or the tagish in Gaelic. Very few people, even now, over the course of all this time, have gotten a really good look at a haggis in the wild. So it's difficult to give an accurate description, but I've grouped together what I could find, which is what I normally do. I just look across the internet, bring everything together, and then you decide how you feel about it. They're small, the size of a large rabbit, and they move extremely quickly. Sometimes so quickly that it's difficult to tell them apart from the like the brown undergrowth that you get on mountains. You've probably seen photos of it, like Scottish in the autumn time, where the hills are this really lovely, warm brown colour. But this is the worst time to be in the mountains, because this is when you're going to come across a haggis. You're not going to see it in the ground, and then you're going to be on it.
Yep.
They have an extremely good sense of smell, which is how they stay away from people when they aren't hunting for food. They're carnivorous.
So you know, not haggis. I have a terrible sense of smell.
Thank God.
Thank God, I know.
A haggis will smell you from miles away. Mm-hmm. It's almost impossible to sneak up on a haggis, which is part of what makes them so deadly. Now, my understanding, and this is going to get you, Kieran, my understanding is that they have really wiry hair, kind of like pigs.
I believe so.
Some of them have different markings, but they camouflage into their surroundings extremely well, mm-hmm. like I said.
Just laying low.
Yeah, but they also don't care.
Yeah.
They're the top of the food chain. They do not give a fuck about anything.
No. If you get too near, they're coming for you.
Oh, and haggis are always born in large litters.
What sort of size do you know?
Well, they breed like rabbits.
Oh, they're rabbit-sized. So
huge litters and multiple litters over a lifetime. Mm-hmm. Which is another reason they're so dangerous, is just sheer numbers.
Yeah, you get overwhelmed. Kind of like, you know, again, Lord of the Rings, Army of the Dead, overrunning you.
Well, if their population isn't managed, then that's what happens. Mm-hmm. But people have managed to study them in part, and they're the ones who were able to learn how they bred and were able to bring in measures to curb the population to stop it getting out of control.
Did they have to do it in, like, suits of armour? Like, big metal suits so they could get close enough?
Well, the major scientific advances happened recently. Mm. It took a long time before people were able to properly study haggis.
That makes sense.
Before then, it was just really difficult. You just had to have the athletic ability to catch them and try and protect your home. Mm. Later, in the 1300s, Scotland was plagued with the plague. The Black Death ravaged Scotland in the 1300s, and the Highlands were no exception to that. Mm-hmm. There were lots of casualties, lots of fatalities to the disease, and unfortunately this, for a time, drew the haggis down from their more traditional mountain burrows to the bigger towns. Mm. Which was terrifying.
That is terrifying. It's one thing having a fox in your bins, it's quite the next thing having a haggis in your bin.
I know, they wouldn't stop with the bin. They're not interested in what's in the bin. They want your baby.
They want your bin. Cribs.
People actually took to barricading their doors shut at night. Wow. And building like tall fences around their homes to try and keep the haggis out.
I'd well believe it.
And away from their children. They were scared for their children. Mm-hmm. Much later, in the early 1600s, records from the court of King James VI.
Obsessed.
These records show how nervous his royal court had become.
A bit.
At the threat that haggis was posing. They actually were one of the first to make plans, to make plans to hold a large haggis cull in and around Stirling. But this was the time when the crowns were unified. So King James left. Oh. And he left for London and never returned. So the cull never came to fruition.
Well, he's so afraid of make-believe things like witchcraft. So something real in front of him, like a haggis, must have really freaked him out.
I mean, it was freaking everyone out. The whole court, they knew that something had to be done. And for once, they were actually concerned with the common person.
Doesn't happen often.
No, they could see the threat that it posed. But because King James didn't approve anything before he left, it never happened.
Because if there's no people, there's no one to tax. That's when you get upset for the common people.
Maybe that was the thinking. Mm. But I mean, as far as James was concerned, he's like, oh, I'm off to London. Well, see you later.
Not my problem. See ya.
You can deal with the deadly disease that is the haggis. I'm out.
Yep.
Now, in the records, it talks a lot about how frightened the mothers of Stirling were. Mm. Now, they were banding together to try to protect their children. And one of the problems was, you remember Stirling is kind of ringed in by hills?
Yep.
And it's one of the reasons that if you're travelling through Scotland, you kind of had to go through Stirling.
The easiest way.
They were worried that the haggis population would grow so much that they wouldn't be able to get out of the city if something were to happen. So these mothers actually came together and started carving symbols into their doors and their door frames to try and keep the haggis out.
Wowee.
And you can still see some of these on and around the front doors of some of the older buildings as you walk up to Stirling Castle. Okay. You know, there's that big hill.
Yeah. What do the symbols look like?
They vary. They vary because it's based on sort of oral tradition or just advice from local healers. So they're all pretty different.
That's fair. There aren't any that are like sausage shaped.
Why would they be sausage shaped?
I don't know. Just curious, I guess.
Don't know why you think that.
Mm.
Over several hundred years, when the witch trials were still happening, so this was around this time and later.
Yep.
Links started being made on multiple occasions between the dangerous and elusive haggis and the people who were being accused of being witches.
Oh.
Naturally, because they were both viewed as being incredibly dangerous and wily, I suppose. Haggis started being seen as the quintessential witch's familiar.
Oh.
Helping them with their hexes and their evil.
That'd be pretty good.
This part, I don't believe in.
No, I don't think that's very believable as part of the story.
You couldn't tame a haggis.
Yeah. Tame a haggis.
Like, none of these women, I say women, mostly women, none of these people were actually witches.
Yeah.
So they couldn't have done that.
No. Just doesn't make any sense.
It's farcical. I don't believe that at all.
Just not real.
No. Not real. From the 1800s onwards, so we're getting towards the modern day, haggis were seen less and less as time went on. Industrialization, and there's bigger populations in cities. They were learning to fear humans, which they hadn't really before.
Yep. Hard to pick a lock when you're a haggis.
Yeah, and there's a lot more noise. Everything's more urban.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult for them to survive. There aren't many written records of haggis attacks in this period, especially when you compare it to the years prior,
mm-hmm.
where the accounts were numerous. There's lots of stories about haggis, and some of them are pretty graphic. Like, they're brutal. I really didn't like reading them. It was also in the 1800s that people started celebrating Burns Night.
Oh, yeah.
Which, as you might know if you're listening to this, is celebrated by serving a haggis for the main meal. And this was a big deal. They were celebrating the Scottish bard, the mm-hmm. country's bard, by demonstrating their superiority over this horrendously dangerous animal.
Yeah, that's why haggis catchers were so renowned.
We're going to get into that, actually. I've got a bit of that. And because you were effectively rescuing your family.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the ultimate honour for Burns for this to be served as the meal.
Yep.
And that's also why cutting into the haggis at a Burns night is so ceremonial and time is taken over it. It's significant, and in a way it memorialises the many who have died at the claws of the haggis.
That does make sense. Never really thought about it. It's kind of like whenever the Queen has to cut a cake, she gets a big sabre to do it.
I love seeing her do that. I think that's so the most fun. Like I was saying, the more that they were hunted, rooted out, and faced with an urban landscape, the balance started to change and they became more fearful of humans. But it was still a great personal risk that some people were going out and killing them off.
Yeah.
Extremely dangerous. And there are, unfortunately, isolated reports up until the present day of people going missing on haggis hills.
Mm.
Now, it's something that gets taught to every Scottish child by their family. You absolutely do not play on a haggis hill. But you get people who come visit and they don't know, and it's just a death sentence.
Yeah, it's just a danger. You have to be on the alert.
Like, it's not just stories. That you have to pay attention and keep yourself safe, you know? In the present day, I want to say the special knowledge of haggis hunting is still passed down through families.
Oh, yeah.
So saying that in the beginning, you just had to have the athletic ability to be able to chase it down and capture it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain methods that I couldn't find anywhere. I couldn't tell you because they're held very secretively. But they're passed down through families and some people still move into that as a profession. And a couple of people we went to school with did that. Even though it's still very dangerous, it's not a safe job, but it has become easier over time to keep the haggis population under control.
Yes.
And that's why you can find haggis in supermarkets.
Yeah.
Which is insane to me.
I know.
It wasn't like that when we were wee.
Seems madness. If you have Scottish grandparents, you should ask them about the haggis.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tricky thing because they probably don't want to talk about it.
Maybe.
Because I know from my experience that my granny still won't touch them.
Mm-hmm.
She won't go near them. She won't serve it in the house. None of that. Because there's just too many bad memories for her. I can't really blame her. But that is the history of the haggis. And I should say at this point that you absolutely should not go hunting for haggis yourself. No matter what you've heard in this episode. It's really dangerous. There's a really high likelihood that you'll get hurt.
Yeah, just stick to it in the supermarket.
And I really hope that we haven't upset any Scottish people listening, because I know it's really difficult to hear about. It's a painful part of our history, but I think it's important that people know about the haggis so that fewer people get into accidents with them.
Absolutely. And especially with, we have a lot of listeners not from Scotland, if they're going to be coming on holiday or to visit, to do the generally spooky tour, be on the alert.
And absolutely, do not go to Haggis Hills. Like, don't search for them. Don't go there. It's just too dangerous. Do you have anything you want to add?
I don't think so.
I steamrollered you this episode.
Nope. I'm just...
It's a tough one for
reeling. You. Yeah. It's just hard. It's hard as a Scottish person to talk about it. That's why it doesn't get talked about in a lot of podcasts. But I think it's important that we did.
Well, that is the legend of the haggis. I hope you like this week's episode.
Yep. A bit more formal, a bit more serious.
But we'll be back next week with a nicer episode.
Yeah.
Something a little less creepy. We will speak to you next week.
We will. Bye.
Bye.